his attempts to get out of sex are becoming more and more uncreative. Next, he will be telling me he has a migraine. "It's fine," I say. "Go to bed. You're off the hook." He raises his eyebrows. "Off the hook?" "I just mean we don't need to have sex tonight." Nate looks taken aback.
"If you want to have sex."
The last thing I want is to get into a big emotional argument with my husband on my birthday. So I just shake my head. "I'm tired too. I'll meet you upstairs." And that's what I will do on my first day of being 30 years old. I will turn in for the night at a record 9:30 in the evening. While Nate heads upstairs, I hear a buzzing sound from inside my purse. When I retrieve my phone from my purse, I see a new message on SnapFlash. There's only one man who messages me on SnapFlash, and at the beginning of the night, I had vowed to end things with that man. "I left a present for you at the door." I smile down at the message for the 60 seconds until it disappears. I look up the stairwell to make sure Nate has disappeared into the bedroom. Then I creep over to our front door and crack it open. There's a shoebox at our door. I snatch the shoebox off the front porch before anyone can see it. Jay must have slipped over to drop it off while we were at dinner, because the box definitely wasn't here when we left. I pull the lid off the box, and I can't help but let out a gasp. It's a pair of Sam Edelman sling pumps in a glossy red color. I had been admiring them a couple of weeks ago in the store, and I was disappointed when the last pair disappeared, because they were just barely within my price range. And now I realize where the pumps disappeared to. Even though money is tight for him, Jay used his minimal funds to buy me a birthday present he knew I would love. Another message pops up on my phone.
"Did you get it?"
"I love them. Thank you so much."
"I knew you would."
My eyes tear up. Life is so incredibly unfair. I am stuck in what I am increasingly realizing is a loveless marriage. And meanwhile, I have no chance of being with the man who I really love. I'm about to try on my new pair of shoes when I hear a noise outside the door. My heart leaps. I don't even care if the neighbors see. I want more than anything for Jay to be standing outside my door. I yank open the front door, ready to greet him with a big sloppy kiss. Except when I look out to the front door, there's nobody there. Aside from the porch lights, everything is dark. "Hello?" I call out. No answer. More quietly this time, I say, "Jay?" There's no reply. That's so strange. I was sure I heard a noise that sounded like it was coming from right outside the door. I'm shocked that there isn't somebody standing there, but it seems like I must have imagined it. After all, there isn't anyone out there. Chapter 27. Addie. When I get to my locker at the end of the day, the lock has been cut. I stare at it for a moment, my eyes bugging out. The lock is still hanging exactly where it was the last time I came to my locker, but the metal bar has been sliced by a lock cutter. I've heard the staff will sometimes do it if they think there are drugs in your locker, but I don't know why anyone would think that about me. But then when I open my locker, I know exactly who did this. My locker is completely filled with shaving cream. I gasp at the sheer quantity of shaving cream filling the locker. There are probably books and papers in there, and also my coat, but right now it basically looks like a locker of shaving cream. If there's anything I want in my locker, I'm going to have to stick my hands in and sift through what looks like 3 gallons worth of foam. Several students have witnessed this spectacle, and based on the number of giggles, it's apparently hilarious. I don't have to guess why this was done to me. Kenzie has made enough snide comments in gym about shaving my legs, even though I've been diligently running a razor over my legs twice a week. "Oh, wow!" Before I even turn around, I know who the voice behind me belongs to. "I bet all that shaving cream will come in handy," Someone did you a huge favor. I blink the tears from my eyes before I turn around to look at Kenzie. She and Bella are watching me at my locker, drawing closer than any other student dares to get. How long have they been standing here and waiting for me to witness this disaster? I should feel sorry for them that their lives are so small, but I don't. I mostly just feel sorry for myself. Why is Kenzie doing this to me? Is she jealous because she thinks Hudson likes me better than her? That's clearly not the case. He's dating her. If he has any lingering feelings for me, even as a friend, that would be a big surprise to me. He won't even speak to me. A crowd has gathered around me now. Everyone is watching to see what I'll do next. Really, they're watching and feeling glad that they aren't the ones with the locker filled with shaving cream. Nobody wants to be on Kenzie Montgomery's bad side. Yet, here I am, and I don't even know what I did to get here. Excuse me, an adult voice rings out from the periphery of the crowd. Oh, thank God. Will you please let me through right now? My momentary relief that there would finally be an adult who could help me deal with the situation vanishes when I see who has pushed her way through the crowd. It's Mrs. Bennett, the worst possible person. And when she sees the contents of my locker, she looks decidedly pissed. Then again, I've never seen her not look pissed, so it's hard to tell the difference. Addie, she says sharply, what is going on here? Kenzie hasn't budged. You might think she has a lot of nerve, but really, she knows I'm not going to rat her out. That would be social suicide, especially if I did it in front of everyone else. If I have any chance of coming back from something like this, it will vanish if I tell on her now. And anyway, she'll just deny it, and everyone will believe her instead of me. Besides, I've got her house keys. I can get my revenge. Mrs. Bennett folds her arms across her chest, waiting for my answer. Addie, I don't know, I finally say. I guess someone put shaving cream in my locker. Who? She presses me. I shrug. She tilts her head. Really? You don't have any idea whatsoever who might have broken into your locker and filled it with shaving cream? I shake my head slowly. Mrs. Bennett looks around at the crowd of kids who have become an audience to my humiliation. All of you, go home. Her beady eyes zero back in on me, a stark contrast from her husband's kind brown eyes. And you, clean this up, Addie. Seriously, what is her problem? She is so harsh. And she is married to a freaking poet, the nicest teacher in the whole school. Why is she like this? Why is she always so mean? But at least she gets the kids to stop gawking at me, so that's something. Although Kenzie and her friends linger at the end of the row of lockers, still watching, I can hear their giggles as I contemplate my situation. Like, what am I supposed to do now that my locker is filled with shaving cream? I don't even know how to begin to clean this all up. Not to mention the fact that my books are wrecked. I guess I could scoop it up. I wish I could just take a hose to the entire thing. And also, I don't have anything to clean it up with. If I were home, it would be easier. But what am I supposed to do to clean up a bunch of shaving cream in the middle of the hallway at my high school? What are you waiting for? Kenzie calls out. Do you need us to get you a razor? Bella laughs at that. Don't give her a razor. She would probably slit her wrists. Kenzie says something to Bella, and I can't quite make it out, but it kind of sounds like she said, so what? Every time I think I've experienced the worst day yet, there is a new winner. Just to make my humiliation complete, Hudson appears to join their little group. He's wearing his football uniform, but it's not yet caked in dirt, which means he's heading over to practice. I'm sure he wanted to see the look on my face as I experienced the locker of shaving cream. Hell, for all I know, he's the one who cut the lock. I doubt Kenzie did that herself. What's going on? He says, his pale blue eyes looking right at me for a change. Kenzie snickers. Addie is having some issues. Anyway, we better get to practice. Hudson is staring in my direction, a frown on his face. Through most of elementary school, he got bullied pretty badly. I remember once on the playground, after a morning of rain, the ground was all muddy, and some kids pushed him so that he fell face down in the mud. He didn't fight back, though. He just took it, like he always did. I was the one who helped him up and took him to the bathroom to get cleaned up after. To my surprise, instead of joining Kenzie, Hudson walks over to where I'm standing in front of my shaving cream-filled locker. For a moment, I get the urge to throw my arms around his padded shoulders for the hug he would have given me before our whole friendship fell apart. Addie, what's going on? Nothing, I mumble. I just need to get this cleaned up. His eyes rake over the gallons of shaving cream in my locker.
Jesus.
Yeah. He glances back to where Kenzie and her friends are standing, then looks back at me.
Let me help you get it cleaned up.
These are literally the most words Hudson has said to me in months. He means well, but he has to realize that he can't help me clean up my locker. Kenzie won't allow it. Sure enough, Kenzie's voice calls out, Hudson, we have to get to practice. You should go, I tell him. Your girlfriend is going to be mad at you. His eyes darken.
She's not my boss. I'm going to help you.
Hudson! She doesn't come closer to us, but her sharp voice fills the hallway. We're going to be late if you don't come right now.
Screw her, he mumbles under his breath. Come on, we can get this done quickly.
I look over at Kenzie, who seems nothing short of furious. She broke into my locker and vandalized it, and I haven't even done anything to her to deserve it. I can't imagine what hell she'll bring down on me for hijacking her boyfriend. Listen, I say, you've got practice. You should go.
No, he says firmly. I'm going to help you. I want to.
Except you're making it worse. He jerks his head back. He was trying to be a good guy and help an old friend, but he has to realize I'm right. Kenzie is getting angrier by the second. And if I let him help me, there will be retribution. As painful as it will be to clean this up by myself, it's better this way.
Addie,
he says, really, go to practice. You've done enough. Hudson doesn't look happy about it, but he obligingly turns around to join Kenzie. Although before he disappears down the hallway, he turns around to look at me one last time, and he looks so sad. That surprises me. I mean, Hudson is now one of the most popular kids in school. His life is infinitely better than it was when it was just us two losers hanging out together. But for a moment, I wonder if he misses when it was just the two of us. I wonder if he misses me as much as I miss him. But we're never going to be able to be friends again. Things will never be the way they used to be between the two of us. Not since Hudson helped me kill my father. Chapter 28 Addie. I end up grabbing a lot of paper towels. The best thing would be if I could figure out how to get a hose and spray down the entire locker. I grabbed most of my books from the bottom of the locker, and I formed a little stack on the floor. For the most part, they seem to have survived the shaving cream, so there's that. It would have been easier if Hudson were helping me. Of course it would be. It almost killed me to have to send him away, especially since he was extending the first olive branch since it all went down nearly a year ago. I will never forget that day. The best and worst day of my life. As I clean out the shaving cream from my locker, I close my eyes and remember the evening my father stumbled home drunk for the zillionth time. It wasn't even that late. But of course, it didn't matter. My dad could be drunk at 2 in the afternoon. Hudson was at my house studying. We often studied together, although now he had football practice and on top of that a part-time job. But whenever he could, he came by. Hudson's strongest subject was math and weakest was English, the reverse from me, so we tried to help each other. He looked alarmed when we heard my father yelling downstairs. I remember telling him, "Just ignore it. He'll probably pass out soon." But that wasn't what happened. My father bounded up the stairs of our house, yelling and screaming. And when he found Hudson in my room with the door closed, he was livid. Despite the fact that he knew we were friends, we were clearly studying, and Hudson had been coming around since we were little kids. He started yelling about how I was a slut, and Hudson was taking advantage of his daughter. And he just wouldn't stop. It was Hudson who finally stood up to him. He had been working out for football for nearly a year and a half, and he had grown over the summer and was now taller than my father. He stood over him and said in a low growl, "You can't talk to Addie like that." Anyone with common sense would have backed down at that point, but not a guy who had recently downed a bottle of whiskey. Hudson was only making him angrier. The two of them kept shouting at each other in the hallway. It was my father who shoved Hudson first, right in his chest. I don't know what Hudson would have done next. I don't know if he had it in him to punch my father in the face, even though his hand was already balling into a fist. As it turned out, though, I was the one who shoved my father back. I didn't even realize how close we were to the stairwell. I was as surprised as anyone when he stumbled hard backward and then went tumbling down the stairs. Hudson and I both flinched when we heard the sickening thump at the bottom of the stairs. We raced down the steps and found my father lying in a crumpled pile, his neck twisted at an unnatural angle. Hudson was freaking out. I saw him endure years of bullying and never shed a tear. But this was the first time he looked like he might cry. "He's dead, Addie. We killed him." I wasn't absolutely sure he was dead, but I wasn't going to get close enough to him to find out. And I wasn't going to take the heat for giving him exactly what he deserved. "We have to get out of here," I told Hudson. He stared at me, blinking his watery eyes. "What are you talking about? We have to call the police, or an ambulance. You want to go to jail?" I had to drag Hudson out the back door. We took the shortcut from my house to his back door, and 10 minutes later, we were safely locked in his bedroom. I tried my best to stay calm, but Hudson continued freaking out. "This is wrong," he kept saying. "We have to tell someone what happened. We have to call the police, Addie." Of course, only an hour later, my mom came home from her shift at the hospital and found my father lying dead at the bottom of the stairs. There was no evidence of foul play, and his blood alcohol level made it clear that he had lost his balance at the top of the stairs and taken a tragic fall. And as far as anyone knew, Hudson and I were together in his room studying the whole evening. So nobody ever found out about our roles in his death. But Hudson never forgave me. We got away with it, but the next day at school, Hudson would barely look at me. I kept trying to talk to him, and he just kept saying, "I can't, I can't." Somehow I didn't realize quite how shaken he was. I didn't realize it was the sort of thing he would never be able to get past. Without Hudson, I was a disaster in math the next semester. And without his friendship, I was even more of a disaster. The only other person I had to talk to was my mother, and she was also in mourning. I had nobody. So when Mr. Tuttle was nice to me, what was I supposed to do? Turn him down? He was just trying to be nice. Even though no one would believe me, he never did anything inappropriate. If I had a father like him, maybe I wouldn't be so messed up. It kills me that his whole life got screwed up because of me. It takes me over an hour, but I finally get my locker mostly cleaned out. My books are sort of damp, but I'll just have to let them dry out overnight. There's nothing more I can do. Just as I'm making one last trip to the bathroom for paper towels, I look out one of the windows in the hallway. It's pouring, of course. I did remember seeing on the forecast that it was going to rain later,
but I figured I would be able to beat the weather. Now I'm going to have to bike home while buckets of water are being dumped on my head. I do one final wipe down of my locker, and just as I'm finishing, none other than Mr. Bennett comes down the hallway. I blink my eyes in surprise at the sight of him. He's here late a lot, though, because he's the staff supervisor for the school newspaper.
"Hello, Addie," he says.
He looks into my locker, which still has a tiny bit of shaving cream clinging to the corners I couldn't quite reach.
"What are you doing?"
My instinct is telling me I should lie, but instead I blurt out, "Someone sprayed shaving cream all over my locker." He flinches.
"Ouch. Who was it?"
I just shake my head. He raises his eyebrows, but there's no way I'm telling him.
"Fine."
He glances into my locker.
"Need any help cleaning it up?"
Mr. Bennett's reaction is such a stark contrast from the way his wife snapped at me earlier. "Actually, maybe you can reach some of the shaving cream in that corner over there."
"You got it."
Mr. Bennett winds up helping me clean out the rest of the shaving cream, and we devise a way to put the books back in the locker to optimize them drying out. It all kind of feels like a geometry problem I don't know how to do, but it will be fine. I've done the best I can anyway. "Thanks," I tell Mr. Bennett as we get my locker closed. I have to remove the broken lock, and then I replace it with the one from my gym locker. That would have been tricky.
"No problem."
He arches an eyebrow.
"You need a ride home?"
I wince. Mr. Tuttle drove me home a few times, which was one of the examples of inappropriate behavior that the principal cited. "No, thanks."
"It's pouring, though,"
he points out.
"And you don't have a car, do you?"
I snort. "I don't even have a driver's license, just a stupid permit."
"Well, then, maybe you shouldn't turn down a perfectly good ride."
I don't know what to say. Obviously, I would rather get a ride in Mr. Bennett's nice, dry car than have to attempt to ride my bike home, or worse, walk it home in the rain. My mom is still at her shift at the hospital, so there's no chance of her picking me up for at least another couple of hours. "I don't want to get you in trouble," I finally say. He nods soberly.
"I appreciate that, but honestly, it will be fine. I've driven other students home, and I haven't lost my job yet."
When he says it like that, it doesn't sound like such a big deal. It's just a ride from one human being to another. Just because he's my teacher, he can't give me a ride home? That seems ridiculous. "Okay," I finally say. "This is not a big deal. Nothing bad will happen." Chapter 29. Addie. Mr. Bennett is parked close to the back entrance of the school, but he still produces an umbrella, and I huddle close to him to keep from getting wet. But not too close, obviously. His car turns out to be a gray Honda Accord. It's weird because I expected something flashier, like a bright red convertible or something, which is weird because it's not like Mr. Bennett is flashy. But this car just seems so much like an adult car, even though Mr. Bennett seems like one of the kids. Also, the inside smells like him. I don't know what exactly the smell is. Maybe a cologne or aftershave or something. But I have noticed that he has a nice smell. I can't smell it when he's at his desk. But when he comes around the side of his desk and I am in my seat in the first row, I get a whiff of it.
"Sorry, it's messy,"
he tells me as he clears a few papers off the passenger seat. It's not that messy, though, especially compared to my mother's car. In all the time I've been getting into her car, I have never seen it without fast food French fries on the floor. I slide into the passenger seat and buckle my seatbelt. When Mr. Bennett gets into the driver's seat, that feels even more weird. It doesn't feel like we are teacher and student anymore, but more like two friends going home together. The only person I ever ride like this in the car with is my mother, and she is much older than Mr. Bennett.
Like by at least 10 years, maybe more. And he's not like any other adults I know. I rode in the car with Mr. Tuttle, but he was old, like my father, or even kind of like my grandfather or something. But Mr. Bennett isn't like that. He is really handsome, more handsome than basically all the boys in our class. And it's hard not to notice that. Of course, if we were friends, I wouldn't call him Mr. Bennett. His first name is Nathaniel. Nathaniel Bennett. It makes me think of Nathaniel Hawthorne, who wrote The Scarlet Letter, which I had to read in last year's English class. There's something poetic about the name Nathaniel. Nathaniel and Adeline. We sound like a couple from hundreds of years ago. I've heard other teachers refer to him as Nate. If we were friends, that's probably what I would call him. But since we're not actually friends, I will still be calling him Mr. Bennett. Thank you again, I tell him as he starts the engine.
No problem.
He pulls out of his parking spot, the wiper blades furiously swishing back and forth.
Couldn't let you walk home in this mess.
And I'm not in any rush.
Eve is going out with a friend tonight.
I sit beside him as he navigates onto the road. I told him my address, and he seems to know how to get there without his GPS. So I sit there, playing with the loose thread on the seam of my jeans. I'm trying to think of something to say conversation-wise, but everything in my head just seems so completely lame. I mean, I'm 16 years old. I don't think there's anything interesting I can say to him. Usually when we talk, it's about poetry, but that conversation seems out of place here.
So,
he finally says,
is the person who put shaving cream in your locker the same one who ruined your clothes?
I hesitate for a moment before nodding. I submitted my letter to Kenzie in lieu of an assignment, although to be honest, some of the angry thoughts were aimed at Mrs. Bennett as well. Mr. Bennett never graded it or returned it to me, but when I handed it in, he said to me,
I bet it felt good to write that.
It really did. But not as good as it would feel to do all those things.
I'm sorry that's been happening to you, he says. You don't deserve to be treated that way. Nobody does. And you should know, there's nothing wrong with standing up for yourself.
It's kind of hard to stand up for myself when the other person has their own posse. I brace myself, waiting for some sort of motivational lecture like I get from every adult. But instead, Mr. Bennett just nods.
I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes high school sucks.
I'm sure it didn't suck for you.
I don't think you realize what it was like to be a 16-year-old boy who enjoyed writing poetry.
Despite everything, I have to laugh. It's hard to imagine Mr. Bennett being 16 years old like me. But there are times he seems very young. I can almost imagine him being a teenager, sitting under that tree outside the school, writing poems. What was the first poem you ever wrote? I ask him. My face burns slightly, wondering if I asked him a stupid question. But he doesn't act like he thinks it's stupid. He purses his lips like he's thinking about the answer. I give myself permission to look at him, and I notice a little healing cut on his chin from when he must have been shaving this morning. A lot of the boys in my class don't shave yet, and they just have scattered strands of this gross, scraggly hair on their chins.
I wrote a poem when I was 6, he says, for my mom, for Mother's Day. She hung it up on the refrigerator, and it was there for years, so I still remember it. Let me think. I love my mom, and I know why. She makes me food so I don't die.
That's, like, the cutest thing ever, I squeal.
I know. I was adorable.
He grins at me.
How about you?
I don't think I wrote anything quite that cute. Anyway, I didn't become a serious poet until I was in high school. Now my face feels like it's on fire. I didn't mean to say I'm a poet or anything. I'm not.
I just mean that I didn't start writing poetry seriously until then. Sort of serious.
You are a poet, though.
The smile drops off his face.
Don't say you're not, because you absolutely are. More than a lot of adults who claim to be.
I squeeze my hands between my knees. Sometimes adults say things that are patronizing, but this doesn't sound like that. He sounds like he truly means it. I almost feel sad when my house comes into view. I feel like I could talk to Mr. Bennett in the car for the next hour or two. Usually when I'm in the car with my mom, I turn on the radio because talking can get awkward. But I didn't feel the urge to do that at all with Mr. Bennett. Thanks for the ride, I say as he pulls up to my curb.
It was my pleasure.
He throws the car into park, and for a split second, it almost feels like the two of us are on a date and he's dropping me off at home at the end of the evening. It's so preposterous, but at the same time, it feels that way. And for a moment, I almost feel like I'm supposed to lean in for a goodnight kiss. But that would be ridiculous. Thank you again. I grab my bag off the floor and open the door to the car. Really.
Anytime, Addie.
As I dart from the Honda to my front door, trying to avoid the raindrops splashing down on me, I find myself smiling like an idiot. Chapter 30. Eve.
Now these are a perfect fit.
Jay is kneeling beside me in a back row of Simon's shoes, having placed a pair of Calvin Klein green pumps on my feet. We do this sometimes after our session in the storeroom,
if she hasn't called him to come home.
We go out to the main part of the store, and he helps me try on shoes. There are already half a dozen boxes on the floor beside me. I can't afford these, I remind him, although they do admittedly look gorgeous.
I wish I could buy them for you.
His eyes meet mine.
I wish I could buy all these shoes for you.
And I wish I didn't have to go home to him. I blurted that out without thinking. But as the words leave my mouth, I realize how true they are. On my birthday, I was considering recommitting to my marriage. But now I realize that Nate and I can never crawl back to each other. The abyss between us widens every day.
Why not leave him?
Jay says. I snort as I kick off the pumps. I like them too much, and it's frustrating. And then what? We run off together? Even though I say it sarcastically, the truth is that I dream of a happy ending for me and Jay. It will never happen. We both have too many entanglements. But if only we could. In the end, though, I couldn't do it to Nate. I couldn't humiliate him that way. Sometimes I think he would barely miss me, though. He came home tonight, dripping wet, and he told me he had taken a walk in the rain to inspire himself. Then he went up to his office on the second floor, and he closed the door. I knocked to tell him I was leaving, but he barely acknowledged me. As if on cue, Jay's phone starts ringing. This time while he is talking, I can hear a baby crying in the background. I rest my chin on my hands, trying to push away the stabbing guilt in my chest. No matter what happens with Nate, I need to end things with Jay, sooner rather than later. You have to go, I acknowledge as soon as Jay ends the call.
She wants me home, he sighs. The baby is. Anyway, next week?
While he is still crouched beside me, I reach out and run my fingers along an old jagged scar just below his hairline. He told me he got it when he was a child, trying to worm his way under a fence. One of these weeks, it will be the last time for the two of us. But I hope that won't be this week or next week. It will be soon, though. Yes, I say. I'll see you next week. Jay looks down at the shoeboxes scattered at my feet.
I better put all these away. I don't want to get in trouble.
All the boxes came from the storeroom, so we each grab a bunch of them to carry back there. Almost like Pavlov's dogs, I start to get turned on the second we get close to the storeroom. It doesn't matter that we've already gone at it twice tonight. I still want him.
And by the look on his face when he glances over at me, he feels the same way.
Next week, he says it as much to himself as he does to me. I already can't wait.
We leave the store together. He locks up, and then, as always, he walks me to my car first, parked in the tiny lot. I always get a bit anxious when Jay and I are out in public together, but usually it's only briefly as we're walking to our cars. But today, I get this uneasy feeling, like somebody's watching us. When I get near to my Kia, Jay grabs my arm and leans in to kiss me again. Then he heads off to his own car, back to his home with a crying baby. I climb into my Kia and return to my husband who doesn't love me.
Chapter 31. Addie. I have a math midterm today, and I am so screwed. I don't understand any of the material. Under the best of circumstances, I usually struggle. When he was still speaking to me, before I made him cover up my father's accidental murder, Hudson used to sit with me and patiently explain the material to me. And then, later on, Mr. Tuttle did the same. However, it seems like I have systematically isolated everyone who used to offer me free help. I should ask my mom for a tutor. Mrs. Bennett is not going to slow down her pace for me. But I've been hesitant to ask for a tutor because money has been tight. Mom has been picking up extra shifts at the hospital, and I overheard her having a scary conversation with the bank about our mortgage payments. So the last thing I want to do is ask her to blow more money on me because I'm too stupid to understand trigonometry. And even if I get a tutor, that's not going to help me right now, as Mrs. Bennett is passing back copies of the midterm exam. Nothing can help me now. I check out the first question, hoping that the test is miraculously much easier than expected. Maybe I'm more prepared than I think. Hey, crazier things have happened. A swimmer has to retrieve an object 15 feet away from the wall of the swimming pool. If the angle of depression of the object from the pool platform is 30 degrees, find the vertical distance they have to swim in order to retrieve the object. This isn't hard. I can do this. Focus, Addie. As I'm staring down at the test paper in front of me, I can't help but notice that I have a perfect view of Kyle Lewis's test paper. He's sitting just in front of me and to my left, but because he is left-handed, I've got a great view of his paper. And Kyle always gets straight A's in math. Of course, that would be cheating. There's no two ways about it. Looking at the test paper of another student would be seriously wrong. And while I have done a lot of bad things in my life, I always thought of myself as the sort of person who would never do that. Except if I don't, I am definitely going to fail this midterm. Damn it! Okay, what if I just look at the answer for a few of the questions? I don't need to copy all of them, just enough to get a passing grade. I mean, it's not like trigonometry is something that will be useful to me in the future. It's not like I'm missing out on some extremely important life skill. Poetry is probably more useful than trigonometry, and that's saying a lot. Before I can stop myself, I find myself copying down Kyle's answers. Thankfully, they are multiple choice questions, and showing work is not required, though I try to scrawl down a few things because I don't want it to look like, well, I don't want it to look like I copied the answers off the guy sitting in front of me. After Mrs. Bennett calls time, I pass my paper up to the front with the rest of the class. Even though most of my answers are correct for a change, I have a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. I cheated. I've never done anything like that before. Maybe deep down, I'm just as bad as my father. But I need to look on the bright side. I was looking at a failing grade on that exam, and while I didn't copy all Kyle's answers, because that would have been super suspicious, I'm pretty sure I got enough right to score a B.
As I pack up my belongings, a shadow falls over me. I raise my head, and Kenzie is looking down on me. She sits two seats behind me on the left, and I'd managed to nearly forget she was there, except for the fact that she always manages to kick my backpack when she walks by me. But now she isn't walking by me. She is standing directly over me.
"So, Addie," she says, "did you get a good look at Kyle's paper?"
All the blood drains out of my face.
"What? Dude, you were so obvious." She rolls her eyes. "I'm sure even Mrs. Bennett saw you staring at his paper. But in case she didn't..."
I realize what she is getting at. Kenzie saw me looking at Kyle's test paper, and she's going to tell on me. If I did something like that to her, I would be tormented for it. But Kenzie can get away with anything. "Please don't do this. I hate to beg her, but I can't have another scandal at the school. I can't. Maybe just one or two answers. That's it." She shrugs.
"I know what I saw, Addie."
Kenzie strides out of the classroom, going much faster than me with her long, slender legs. She really is just physically so obnoxiously perfect. I can't even blame Hudson for liking her, even though I hate her. "Kenzie," I am huffing and puffing to keep up with her as she walks down the hall in the opposite direction of my next class. I'm probably going to end up being late, but I need to prioritize. "Please don't talk to Mrs. Bennett. Please. I'll do anything you want." Kenzie comes to an abrupt halt. She turns to look at me, her blue eyes flashing.
"Anything?"
"Yes, anything."
"Fine."
She taps a finger against her teeth. Her nails are painted ice blue.
"When we get to English class today,
I want you to get down on your hands and knees and lick the floor." My mouth falls open.
"Lick the floor?"
She nods. "For 60 seconds. I don't even know what to say. If it were some other class, well, I'm not sure I would do it because, like, gross. But I definitely am not going to lick the floor in front of Mr. Bennett. God, what would he think of me? "I'm not doing that," I say.
"In that case," her eyes twinkle, "I guess Mrs. Bennett and I are going to have a little talk."
"Please, Kenzie," I whimper. "I made a terrible mistake. I've never done anything like that before. I'm not a bad person."
"That," Kenzie says, "is debatable."
With those words, she turns away from me, practically smacking me in the face with her long blonde hair. Why does Kenzie hate me so much? I never did anything to her. And it doesn't seem like she would do this because of Mr. Tuttle. It must have something to do with Hudson. Is it possible Hudson told her our secret? If that's true, I have even worse problems than Mrs. Bennett finding out that I cheated on the trigonometry midterm. Chapter 32. Addie. While I am sitting in Mr. Bennett's English class, not licking the floor, even though Kenzie keeps shooting me pointed looks, a student enters the room with a folded piece of paper in her hand, interrupting Mr. Bennett right in the middle of discussing a Robert Frost poem. When he raises his eyebrows, the student says, "I have a note for Adeline Severson." Mr. Bennett takes the note. He opens it up and reads the contents, and his lips turn down. For a moment, his brown eyes meet mine. "Thank you," he says to the student. "I'll make sure she gets it." I've never wished for superpowers before, but right now, I would give anything for X-ray vision to let me see what was on that piece of paper. But Mr. Bennett puts it down on his desk, and he goes right back to discussing Robert Frost. As if I could concentrate on how nothing gold can stay right now. Sure enough, as soon as the bell rings, Mr. Bennett cocks his finger at me. I trudge over to his desk, and he holds out the note to me. I can't stop my hands from shaking slightly as I read the contents. "Adeline, please come to my classroom immediately after your last period.
Eve Bennett.
Oh no, I can't believe Kenzie told her so quickly.
What's that all about?
Mr. Bennett asks me, although his voice is gentle. There's a tiny crease between his eyebrows.
I have no idea.
I lie. Mr. Bennett doesn't look like he believes me, but he doesn't push me further.
If you have any problems, you know you can tell me, right?
His offer is so nice, I almost burst into tears. But the worst part is that if he knew what I did, that I copied off another student, he would be so disappointed in me. I wouldn't want to get his help for that reason alone. Then again, Mrs. Bennett is his wife. There's no confidentiality here. And if she thinks I did something wrong, she'll tell him all about it. She'll tell everyone. I'm fine, I say. It's another lie, but whatever. Mr. Bennett's eyes are on my back as I walk out of the room. I try to tell myself that this could be about something else. The ominous note does not necessarily mean that Mrs. Bennett knows I was copying Kyle's paper. Maybe she just wants to help me with some tutoring suggestions. But then why would she ask to see me immediately and have another student send me a note? When I get to Mrs. Bennett's classroom, she is sitting at her desk and appears to be grading some of the midterm exams. She's gripping her red pen, and her brow is furrowed in concentration. As I watch her, I genuinely can't figure out what Mr. Bennett could possibly see in her. She's attractive enough, but she's got a frown permanently burned into her face. How can he stand it? Mrs. Bennett? I knock gently on the door to her classroom, even though it's already open. Do you want to see me? Yes. Her lips are a straight line across her face, almost like they have vanished into her mouth. Have a seat, Adeline. The fact that she's calling me by my full name is making me nervous. My mother does that too when she thinks I've been behaving badly, but I do what she says, sliding into the desk directly in front of hers. So, Mrs. Bennett focuses her attention on me. Her eyes are too small and look beady.
Is there anything you would like to tell me?
I stare at her.
I don't say a word.
Whatever Kenzie told her, there's no proof. When it's obvious I'm not going to confirm or deny anything, she pulls two test papers out from under the pile on her desk and throws them down in front of her.
You copied Kyle's test paper. You are right behind him. You were looking at his paper, and you copied his answers.
I open my mouth to say something, but it feels like there's something stuck in my throat, and nothing comes out. I can't believe this is happening. I've never cheated in my whole life, and the one time I did it, I get caught, like an hour later. I have the worst luck.
To be fair, I didn't get caught for killing my dad.
Well, her eyebrows shoot up. Do you have anything to say for yourself? There are still no words coming. What am I supposed to say? I did cheat. I don't want to lie on top of what I've already done. I'm so sorry, I finally squeak out. Mrs. Bennett looks completely unmoved. That's no surprise. She reminds me of the Wicked Witch in one of those Disney movies. All she needs is a cape. Cheating is an extremely serious matter. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be discussing this with the principal. Principal Higgins already does not like me. She used to like me. Well, for the first year and a half I went to Kasem High, she didn't even know who I was, which is probably the best possible situation. The first time I went in to talk to her, she was so kind to me, and now she thinks I'm a troublemaker because of what I did to Mr. Tuttle. What is she going to do when she finds out I've been cheating on top of everything else? You can go, Mrs. Bennett tells me. I stand up on shaky legs and somehow manage to make it out of her classroom without collapsing. I don't know what is going to happen tomorrow, but it's going to be awful. The principal is going to find out that I copied off Kyle. They're probably going to have to bring in my mother, and then I'm going to see that awful, disappointed look on her face.
And maybe worst of all, Mr. Bennett is going to know about it. I am so furious at Kenzie. She did not have to tell Mrs. Bennett about this. She could have kept her mouth shut. I don't even understand why she hates me so much. I'm not going to be a doormat anymore. I'm not going to let Kenzie get away with this.
Chapter 33. Eve. I'm surprised that when I get home today from the school, Nate is already there waiting for me. I'm almost always home first. Often he stays so late that I can't figure out what he's doing there. But today when I get home, he is sitting on the sofa. And when I walk into the living room, he stands up to greet me. He even gives me a kiss.
How was your day?
He asks. Good. I glance over at the kitchen to see if he's got anything cooking in there. What would you like for dinner tonight?
Actually, he says, I thought we could order something from anywhere you want.
Nate usually thinks the delivery places are too expensive, and he'd rather have some spaghetti out of the box than get delivery from an Italian restaurant. That sounds great. There's a smile playing on his lips. His eyes crawl down my body, and there's an expression on his face I haven't seen in a long time.
You look nice today, Eve.
Do I? I'm wearing a white blouse with tan slacks, although I do have on my pair of Manolo Blahniks, which I don't wear all the time, but I needed a boost today. Thank you. And then he kisses me again. A long, lingering kiss this time. There is an urgency in his kiss, and a second later, he works the top button free on my blouse. Nate, I gasp.
Let's go upstairs, he breathes in my ear. Okay.
I'm not going to say no. Half an hour later, the two of us are lying breathless in our bed. Nate was so determined to ravage me that I kicked off my Manolos instead of removing them carefully and placing them lovingly back in the closet. The rest of our clothes are strewn about the room. When I look over at Nate, he has a sheen of sweat over his body, and he looks back at me and grins.
Woo, he says. That was...
I nod in agreement. I don't know what changed today, but maybe there is a path back to saving our marriage. Not that I don't care deeply about Jay, but he and I do not have a future together. Nate is the future, for better or for worse. Good thing we're ordering in, I say. I am way too tired to cook. Nate laughs.
I know.
We should, you know, my eyes lock with his. We should do that more often.
Absolutely.
I snuggle up next to my husband, and he puts his arm around me. I rest my head against the muscles in his shoulder, feeling contented with him for the first time in a long time. We do have sex once a month, but it's never like that anymore. It's usually very regimented, like we're brushing our teeth. This is like back in the old days, when we were first together.
By the way, Nate murmurs into my hair, I got this weird note today. It said that you needed to see Addie Severson urgently. Everything okay?
Addie Severson is the last person I want to talk about when we are relishing in our post-coital bliss. But it feels rude not to answer him. Besides, I want him to know what that girl did. He needs to know what she's capable of. Not really, I tell him. She cheated on her midterm. He's quiet for a moment.
Cheated how?
She was looking at another student's paper. I saw her do it. And then I checked the two papers right after, and the answers were almost identical. That other kid is a stellar student, and there's no way she would have gotten so many right answers on her own.
Wow. So what are you going to do about it?
I'm going to the principal. I'll have to wait till tomorrow morning, but this is the protocol if a student is caught cheating. I'll let Higgins know what happened, and she can deal with it.
The principal?
Nate shakes his head.
Wow, that's rough.
You really have to take it all the way to the principal?
I have to. Those are the rules.
Well, he says thoughtfully as he squeezes my body close to his. It's not like she did anything nefarious. It's not like she had some cheating scheme that she came up with in advance where she stole a set of answers. She was sitting there during the exam, and she didn't know how to do the math problems, which I can definitely relate to. She panicked.
She cheated, Nate.
But you don't even have any proof, do you?
He frowns.
You say you saw her copying another paper, but maybe she didn't. Maybe she really studied for it. Did she admit it?
Technically, Addie did not admit to cheating, but I could see her looking at Kyle's paper. After all my years of teaching, it was painfully obvious. Plus, that girl is not capable of getting that kind of grade on her own, and I saw the look on her face when I confronted her.
Not exactly. She's struggling.
He squeezes me closer to his warm body.
We've all been there, Eve. Didn't you struggle with your English class in high school, and you needed a tutor?
I don't know what to say to that. It's technically true.
So she could have gotten a tutor. She didn't have to cheat. Not every student can afford a tutor. I think we can both agree that Addie has been through a lot in the last year.
Under any other circumstances, this conversation would have enraged me. Cheating is wrong, and the fact that my husband would defend a student who copied off another kid is ridiculous, especially since he seems to have made Addie his little pet project, despite the fact that I warned him about her. But curled up in his arms, I can't work up much anger or even indignation. Nate cares deeply about his students, and I can't fault him for that. It was one of his qualities that made me fall in love with him.
So what do you suggest? I say. Well, he says, obviously you can't let her keep the grade. But if you give her a 0 and a stern warning, I doubt she'll ever try something like that again. And it will give her a kick in the teeth she needs to pull her act together.
You think so? Addie just seems so incredibly hopeless sometimes.
I definitely do.
He kisses the top of my forehead.
I know that deep down you want her and all your other students to do well. I think this is the best thing for her. You don't want to wreck her life, do you? Even if you are still angry about what happened with Art. You realize that wasn't her fault, right?
Do I? I suppose he's right. Addie Severson has been through a lot in the last year, and the truth is, I've been hard on her. Maybe because I'm angry that my own mentor lost his job because of her. Fine, I agree. I won't go to the principal. I'll speak to her about it after class and let her know that she's getting a 0, but I won't report her.
You're doing the right thing, Eve.
He kisses me one more time on the top of the head. Then he rolls out of bed and hits the bathroom. The shower starts running a second later, and my phone buzzes on the nightstand where I left it. I pick it up, and there's a message waiting for me in snap flash.
Will I see you tomorrow night?
I look over at the bathroom door, where the shower is still going strong. I've been looking for that kind of passion from Nate for a long time. In so many ways, it was absolutely perfect. Exactly what I wanted, and I'm hopeful there will be more times like it in the future. And yet, something is bothering me about the whole thing. Maybe I don't love the fact that as soon as it was over, he started talking about Addie, and then jumped right into the shower. But in the end, it isn't about him at all. It's about the guy on the other end of this conversation. Jay scraped together enough money to buy me a beautiful pair of shoes for my birthday when my own husband got me nothing. I've never had to question if he had an ulterior motive. I can see all over his face how much he wants me. So I only have to hesitate a minute before I type a response. I'll be there.
Chapter 34. Addie. Kenzie has cheerleading practice until at least 5 o'clock, maybe later. Her parents with their high-powered jobs won't be home until late as well. I, on the other hand, have absolutely nothing to do with my time while I wait to find out whether Principal Higgins is going to kick me out of school tomorrow. I park my bike down the block from Kenzie's house, chaining it to a lamppost. I take my backpack with me as I walk up the street to her large house, the weight of my books causing the straps of my bag to dig into my shoulders. I walk purposefully, like I'm supposed to be here. Like I'm a friend of Kenzie's coming to visit her. Even though that couldn't possibly be further from the truth. I ring the doorbell, waiting for the sound of footsteps. I ring a second time for good measure, but I am met with only silence. Just as I suspected, nobody is home. The house is completely empty. I glance at the adjacent houses, which look just as dark and silent as the Montgomery house. When I feel confident nobody is watching me, I slip around the side of the house, tromping through the lush green backyard. When I reach the back door, I dig around in the pouch of my backpack. I pull out the set of keys inside. I ditched the diamond-studded Kenzie key ring, but I kept the keys. Of course, it's entirely possible that when Kenzie lost her keys, they decided to change the locks on the door. Then again, she lives in a safe neighborhood. Maybe her parents assumed she dropped her keys somewhere, and it wasn't worth the stress of changing the locks. Well, either way, we're about to find out. There are 3 keys on the ring, but one is larger and looks most like a house key. I take a deep breath and slide the key into the lock. I count to 10 in my head. Then I attempt to turn the key. It turns. I pause for a moment, listening for the sound of a barking dog. I don't hear anything. So I turn the key the rest of the way in the door, twist the knob, and push inside the kitchen of the Montgomery household. The first thing I do when I'm inside is look around to see if there is an alarm system. I've seen those before in other people's houses. And what it would mean is that if I don't disarm it, either an alarm will start sounding or else the police department will be quietly notified. Either way, I don't want that to happen. But I don't see any keypad or signs that the house has an alarm. Which is stupid on their part, because this house needs an alarm. As I step into the Montgomery home, I am taken aback. They have an open floor plan, so from their gleaming new kitchen, I can see the huge expanse of space and expensive furniture in the living room. Our house was built over 100 years ago, and I doubt the interior has changed much since then. We have had the same refrigerator for my entire life, and I feel like it might outlive me and everybody I care about. I leave my sneakers by the back door because their carpet is super light in color, and I've already made a few stains on the kitchen floor with my dirty shoes. I creep across the living room, over to the carpeted stairs, and then I start to climb them. I can't believe I'm doing this. It was bad enough that I cheated on an exam for the first time in my life and got caught. And now, here I am, only a few hours later, breaking into a house, for God's sake. But this whole thing is Kenzie's fault. She didn't have to tell on me to Mrs. Bennett, and she didn't have to do any of the things she's been doing to me all semester. She deserves what's coming to her. When I get to the top floor, the first room I